Page Samach Vov in Brachos, Oris Tzadik Gimel. Page Samach Vov, Oris Tzadik Gimel. We talked about yesterday about the Chassidim Rishonim, who spent a lot of time on davening and before and after it. And in general, we've been talking about different things involving davening. So, the Gemara goes on to discuss. Now, the Mishnah says the din that even if a Melech Yisroel is greeting you in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, you're not allowed to answer. And so the Gemara says that would only apply to a Melech Yisroel, a Melech Umus, you're allowed to answer because of Sakonis Nefashos. So the Gemara tells a story in that connection. Tana Rabbanan, Maisa b'chosid echad trei mispala baderech. It happened once that a certain chosid was davening on the road. And by the way, elsewhere, the Gemara says that when it says chosid echad, we had this earlier in the Masech, actually, chosid echad, other things being equal, usually means either Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Loi, the regular Tanner of Yehuda, or Rabbi Yehuda ben Bavi. So it was one of them. Anyway, he was davening. Uba hegmon echad, a certain Roman nobleman came by, v'nosen lo shalom, and he greeted the chassid, but say it was shalom, v'lo hechse lo shalom. And the chassid didn't answer back because he was in the middle of davening. Himten lo yachasim tfilosei. So the hegmon waited around, the goy waited until the chassid finished his tefillah. La'acha shasim tfilosei, and after he finished, amaloi, he says to him, Reka, you empty person, how could you do such a thing? Doesn't it say in your own Torah, it says, only be careful for yourself, however, be careful for yourself and guard your soul very carefully. Which one meaning of that in context, the Pasuk is saying that you shouldn't forget Matan Torah, but we also understand the drasha from it that it means that a yid has to preserve their life. And a few psukim later, it says you should be very careful for your souls. So apparently this guy knew enough to know that that is how we dash in those psukim. So therefore, so how could you do such a thing? So he says, when I greeted you, why didn't you answer me back? If I would have chopped off your head with a sword, who would demand your blood from me? In other words, there would be nobody even to stand up for you and even to call me to account for it. So what do you think you were doing? So the chassid answers, Hamten ad shafa yes chabidvarim. Wait, don't be so quick to draw your sword. Wait until I appease you with words. Let me explain to you. Omalai, and he says, suppose that you, nobleman, were standing in front of the king, and somebody came and then said shalom to you, would you greet him back with shalom? So the hegman says no. And the chassid asks him, and if you did respond to him, what would they do to you? So the nobleman says, they would chop off my head with a sword. That's disrespectful to the king. Well, then let's make a kavuchomer. You would have been in a situation you're talking about hypothetically. You would have been standing in front of a human emperor. He's here today, but tomorrow he's in the grave. And still, still for you to ignore him and speak to somebody else there would be a terrible breach of Derech Eretz, and they would chop off your head for it. So I was standing in front of the King of all kings, Hashem, who was alive forever and ever, how much more so that I can't interrupt to say shalom to you. So right away, the hegman was appeased by that. The nifter, the base of the shalom, and that chosid was able to go home in peace. Now, the question that a bunch of the Mephoshim ask is, this is a very nice story, but the Gemara has just finished telling us that if you're greeted by a Melech Bas of Adam, a Melech Umas Olam, in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, then you taka have to interrupt in order, because otherwise it's Sakonis Nefashos. So what was this Chosid thinking, after all? So Marashah says just generally he wasn't Choshish for Sakonah. He says, unlike a Melech Umas HaOlam, or an Anas, a highway robber or something, where the Gemara says also is a valid reason to stop, here he didn't consider it was such a sakana. Now, Marsha doesn't elaborate why not. There's actually a few interesting answers that Acharonim give. The Taz says, Eitz Yosef brings it over here briefly, that he says, he's saying to the Hegman, look, I know you're tight. you're not the type to just go and pull out a sword and chop off somebody. First of all, actually, that's before that. But Tzlach actually says, even though we'll say it out of chronological order, but Tzlach says very simple. He says, the chassid heard that, Ben Yehoyada says the chassid was just so fartiffed and davening, he didn't even realize the Hegman is speaking to him. But most of the Mephoshim assume that the chassid was aware that the Hegman is speaking to him, so they give different explanations. But Tzlach says the very fact that the guy first greeted him with shalom, where protocol would usually be that you have to say shalom first to the nobleman, so he realized already that this is a menschlich kind of guy. He's not just the kind of guy who's going to go and chop off his head. Therefore, he knew that he has a chance with him. But the Taz then says on a long similar line, he says, after a why the long loshen hamtin li ad shafa yes to bedvarim, and then he starts telling him the moshel, just start telling him the moshel straight out. It means the Taz says, in connection with these halachas in Orach Chaim, he says what it means is that the chassid was saying, I know your type. You're not the type to just go and chop off people's heads indiscriminately. I know that people of your caliber are the type that you'll listen first to what somebody has to say. I know that I can wait until I am able to talk to you and explain it to you, and you're not going to go and jump the gun and chop off my head before that. Magen Avraham says more simply, he says that the chassid maybe didn't know what kind of guy he's dealing with, but he was certain that this is such a good answer that the guy is, which in fact it was, that the guy is going to be impressed by it and leave him alone. So the Yun Yaakov mentions something else. He says that the fact that he saw that he's waiting around until he finished his tefillah, right? Sure. But that still doesn't completely answer the question, because how did he know when he first didn't answer to him? How did he know the guy's going to wait around there until the end? So, right. There's a similar story with the Rambam. Do tell.
He ran away, he hid many years till he passed away.
Not familiar with the story.
Back to the book.
Okay. Okay. With that said, by the way, though, there are a couple of Sfarim on Orgo, a couple of Mephoshim on Orgomara, I think Chidol brings it, and others, that when it says at the end, Nifter Oisechos of the base of the Shalom, it may mean that actually he was Nifter not long after that, because he was soimach too much on a nest. Even with whatever explanations we say, the guy said, the guy is saying Shalom to him first, and he's waiting around, and so on and so forth. Nevertheless, he's still relying a little too much on a nest. So according to Ben Yehoyada, that's not an issue. He didn't even realize what's going on, but according to everybody else, they realized and was willing to take the chance, and according to them, they're saying that's why the expression, Nifter Oisechos of the base of the Shalom. Right. So he says, Chassidim or Shonim, they know Benafsham, right? Chassidim Gmurim, and Shonim Mitzvah Layeda Davara. But still, right, but still, according to the Chidah and whoever else, maybe it still wasn't the best thing for him to do to be Soimach al Nes like that. Okay. Further on, the Gemara talks about the point. Now, the Mishnah also says that even if a person has a snake winding itself around his leg when he's davening Shemoneh Esrei, he's not allowed to interrupt. And the reason is because a snake is not necessarily so dangerous. And what it does say in Shulchan Aruch, by the way, is you are allowed to walk away, even though usually you're supposed to stand in one place doing Shemoneh Esrei. But if walking away will help get rid of the snake, that you're allowed to do. But to interrupt, to talk, that the Mishnah is saying that not. And then the Gemara goes on to explain the difference if there's a scorpion, or there's a difference if it's a scorpion, then you are allowed to interrupt. Famous explanation of Chassidus, the idea being that a snake's venom, the Gemara mentions in other places, is hot. A scorpion's venom is cold. So therefore, Beruchnius, it represents the idea of a person doing Shemoneh Esrei starting to feel a heat towards Machshavas Zaris, okay, it's not the best thing, but it's not a reason enough to interrupt Shemoneh Esrei. But if he starts feeling a coldness towards other course, that's a valid reason to interrupt right away and refocus himself, because that's much more dangerous to avoid. So it means to interrupt to talk to somebody, right? So then fine, you can reach down and get it off. That's not considered interrupting. But interrupting for this purpose, even running away, it says in Shulchan Aruch, if you need to, that you have a valid reason to do. You know, the same way we learned earlier in the Masechta, we learned in a previous parak, for example, that if a person passes gas in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, or he feels they can't hold himself back from it, then he moves backwards 4 amos and he says a short tefillah, and then whenever, so moving around in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei is not the best thing, but it's not really considered such a hefsek as compared to talking. But yeah, here we're talking about talking, like asking somebody to come help remove the snake or the scorpion, right? So in this,
something come over to you, you have to walk.
So, you're not allowed to talk, but it's under certain circumstances. I mean, it's not so simple. It's not like just willy-nilly you can go and walk in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, but there is more of a heter for it than there is to talk. Yeah.
Of course you can intervene.
Yeah.
The many of us on the airplanes, you say, better than sitting down in the chair.
Mm-hmm.
It's turbulent and then they're complaining you're blocking the way or something.
Right.
They're not coming out of sitting down, not sitting down.
Right. So there is that also, because then at least there's so the best thing to do is to stay in one place. If you can't do that, the next best thing is to move. But yeah, in that case, it is going to break your kavana, and therefore, like you're saying, yeah, the better thing to do it on a plane or whatever, maybe to sit down rather than if you figure that there's a chance that you're going to be interrupted in the middle of standing. Yeah. Primarily in Shulchan Aruch, it says means talking. Yeah. Yeah. So now in this connection, the Gemara tells a story involving a snake. It happened that in a certain place there was an aroid. Rashi describes an aroid as a crossbreed between a snake and a tzav. Now a tzav could mean a turtle, like it does in modern Hebrew. It could also mean a toad, It could mean a few different possibilities what a tzav is. Whatever, it's some kind of very dangerous snake. Sometimes they translate it as a viper. Yesh Omer, by the way, now there's a different kind of creature called an aroid in Gemara, which is a wild donkey. That actually, you find the word for it already in Psukim. So Yesh Omer, that this... What? There's a type, yeah, there are types of toads, there are types of toads that are venomous, that's true, yeah. Right. So maybe this one is a crossbreed between that and a regular snake. Whatever the case, the Yesh Omerim, that actually the word in our Gemara is not supposed to be aroid, because that would be the way you pronounce the name of the wild donkey, but rather arvat, where the vav is actually a consonant. Anyway, whatever it is. So there was this kind of creature in a certain place, Vayim Mazik Sabrius, and it was endangering people, was biting people and killing them. Bo Vodil Rav Chanina Ben Dosa. So they came and informed Rav Chanina Ben Dosa about it. Omalahem. So he tells them, Haruni Eschor, show me the hole, show me the den where this Arvad or Aroid lives. So they went and showed him the snake's den. Rav Chanina Ben Dosa went over there and put his heel on the hole. The snake came out and bit him. And then the snake, instead of Rav Chanina Ben Dosa being killed by the venom, instead the snake died. Now, how did he put himself in danger like that in the first place? So Rashi brings from Halachas Gedolos, when an aroid bites a person, what happens is then you have to have that which one, the person or the snake, will reach water first. If the person reaches water first, then it'll be an antidote against the snake, and then the snake will die. If the snake reaches water first, then the snake will live and the person not. Here, what happened was, and this happened, a spring of water sprang up right from the ground there under his feet. Therefore, he was the first one to reach water ahead of the snake. Therefore, the snake died and he lived. Still, Marsha says, I mean, how does he do that? So Marsha actually brings from the Yerushalmi that has a different version of the story. It's not that he deliberately went there and put his foot on the hole the way that our Gemara is saying. Rather, he went to that area to daven Shemoneh Esrei. And while he's standing davening in Shemoneh Esrei, then the snake came out and bit him. In which case, connect directly with what the Gemara was talking about interrupting Shemoneh Esrei because of snakes or scorpions. So that according to that answer, the answer is he didn't go directly to the hole. He just went to that area, someplace near the snake, and then he went to daven Shemoneh Esrei over there. With that said, though, there are different other explanations. The Chinuch brings an explanation. Sefer HaChinuch brings an explanation that even though, you know, usually we just said in the Gemara before, we have Pesukim that say a person is not allowed to endanger their life, but you have certain very rare high level tzaddikim like Rav Chanina Ben Dosa. The whole world was sustained in his chus. So there, in fact, Yom Yaakov brings such a thing as well. Since there's a baskol, the Gemara mentions in Tainus that says that we actually had it earlier in Arma Sechta as well, that the whole world was sustained because of Rav Chanina Ben Dosa, so he knew that no snake is going to be able to harm him. He's on a level beyond snakes or whatever, or any nivroim being able to harm him, and therefore he knew, therefore according to that, he knew that he could take the chance.
So they
approached him to help them, right. There is an interesting point also they talk about in this connection. There's in general a question in halacha. If you have somebody else in danger, of course you're required to go and then save their life. What if that involves putting yourself in potential danger? Are you allowed to, or are you required to? or Gemara over here may be one of the proofs on the side that says that you should, because we see Rav Chanina Mendoza is putting himself in potential danger, but with that he's going to save other people in the future from being harmed by the screecher. If he's a tzaddik gomer, yeah. So in this case, he knew there's less of a risk, but there's still a slight risk. There's still, yes, he's still be sowing a halanes. So, yeah. Anyway, not lay off safe. He said, Rav Chanina Mendoza took the snake and put it on his shoulder, but he licha the base of Medrash and carried it to the base of Medrash. Omalahem, he tells them, Bonai, my sons, Ru'u she'en aroid menis. Take a look. It's not the aroid or the arvad that kills. Elachet menis. It's really only chet. It's a person's aveiris that killed them. When a person has tremendous schoyas, then Hashem protects him against the snake. Like Rashi says, Hashem makes water or whatever antidote is necessary come right there. But so at that point, the Chachamim said, woe to the person who an aroid meets up with him. But woe to the snake that Rav Chanina Mendoza meets up with, because Rav Chanina Mendoza will win out over the snake. Yeah. Even though he's willing to give up some of his choyos for it, yes. So now the next Mishnah in this parak starts talking about the dinim of the various things that you add in Shemona Esrei. One of them being that you add atachon, that you add something, you add havdalah in Shemona Esrei. And the Gemara brings a three-way machlokas tanoim in the Mishnah. The Mishnah brings a three-way machlokas where you say it in Shemona Esrei. Do you say it in atachonim? Do you say it as a separate bracha? Or do you say it in moed? So the Gemara discusses Havdalah b'chonin adas my timer, according to the opinion, which is halacha, that you say it in the bracha chonin adas. Why dafka there? The Gemara goes through a few different possibilities. One of them being mitoch shehu choil, because it's a weekdayish thing. Leficha kavur b'birkas choil. Therefore, the Chacham set it up in the bracha of weekdays. Meaning, in other words, like this: what are you saying in Atachon? And you're declaring that it's not Shabbos anymore. You're declaring that Hashem separated between Shabbos and the weekdays. Therefore, you put it into the first bracha that you say on weekdays, which you didn't say on Shabbos. Atachonin being the first one of those brachas. Therefore, the Chacham put it there. I think Gemara gives it before that a few other reasons as well, some of which we'll touch on in connection with the next piece of Gemara. Marashah says also the point is that in Atachonin you're asking for brachas for the coming week. Therefore you put it in Atachonin. In other words, in a certain sense, it encapsulates all the next few brachas. All the following brachas of Shemona Esrei are all the things that you're asking Hashem for that you need, that you individually and then the Jewish people in general need, are all encapsulated in the words of Atachon and Tachon. We're talking about Divrei Chol. You're asking an Atachon, and you're asking a Hochel Aleinu Ayama Maboim Lekrasein Ovasholem, make that they should come in peace, that our Maisim should be in peace, so therefore, yeah. So in this connection, the Gemara mentions another point, another one of the points which the Gemara had mentioned is another reason why it's an Atachonin is because Atachonin is we're asking Hashem for Das, and Das is an extremely important thing, and therefore it comes first among the weekday brachas of Shemona Esrei. So in this connection, the Gemara says, Omer Rav Elazar, or Rav Ami, G'doyla Deya Shenemer Betilas Brachas Shel Chol. You see how great the concept of Deya is, of really knowing, of course, because we see that it's placed at the beginning of the weekday brachas. Out of all the things we ask Hashem for, that is the first one that we ask for. In fact, I once saw a vort on it. You know, each of the other brachas, we begin with a request. We start with Hashivenu, Slachlonu, Re'ena Vanyenu, etc. Only this one we begin with a declaration. We don't start out by saying, please give us Das. We start with a declaration. Atachon, you are the one who gives Das. Because the first thing, the most important thing is to be aware, is that the Eivishta gave you Das. And then to ask that you should be able to use that Das in the appropriate way. So, Rav Elazar or Rav Ami, G'doyla Deya Shnitna Ben Shtei Oisis. You see another way in which Deya is so great, in that it's placed between two Oisis, meaning two names of Hashem. This Gemara is also in Sanhedrin. Rashi over there explained that two Oisis means Oisis of Hashem's name, in other words, between the last letter of one and the first letter of the other. But then Rashi also explains there, names of Hashem themselves can be called Oisis in the sense the names of Hashem, after all, don't represent Hashem's actual Metzios. They only represent how we perceive Elikos. So therefore, like each of them is an Ois, each of them is a symbol of some aspect of Elikos as we perceive it. Anyway, Shenemar, Ki Kael Deus Hashem. As the pasuk says, Hashem, as the pasuk says, the kale of not, of understanding is Hashem. So what is the significance of this? What's the significance of Deya being between two names of Hashem? So the Rashba here has an explanation. He says, Bechlal, that he says that like this, we usually think of Apichsidus, that Kale is a name associated with Chesed. And in Chesedus, in the Zohar and in many places in Chesedus, it mentions in that connection the Pasuk, Chesed Kale Kalayoyim. However, the Rashba says over here that no, Kale was actually a name of Gvura. So Kale is a name of Gvura, Havaya is a name of Chesed, and therefore putting Deya between them means we know the world can't exist with only one or the other. That's why it says, first it says Alekim in Maaseh Bereishis, and then afterwards you have Hashem Alekim. So therefore, putting Deya between them, so when a person has real Deya, he recognizes that Hashem has created the world with those two middos, and he begins to understand how Hashem runs the world, and that is the most important thing, in the sense, the Gemara is going to go on to say that somebody who does not have Deya is missing something very vital, and the reason is, because if a person doesn't have that kind of Deya, the Rashba says, how is he going to do any mitzvahs? How is he going to serve Hashem? So therefore, that is why the Chachamim, that he says, that's what we're saying over here. The Chachamim put Deya first in the brachas of Chol, because like Marsha said, it encapsulates all the other brachas. Think of, for example, he says, the next bracha is Hashibein. You're asking Hashem, return us to your Torah, and then you're saying, Slach Lanu, forgive us. How are you going to ask that if you don't even have Deya to understand how Hashem runs the world? So therefore, the most important thing is Deya, and therefore it's represented by the fact that it's being placed between two names of Hashem. HaKosef goes into a little more detail. He says, that, again, the context of this Gemara is we're talking about where you say Atachon Antonu, and we're saying that in the end, you say it in the Bracha Atachon. So now, the point is, in other words, the Chachamim are discussing what's the point? Is it on the one hand that we're saying, because we're asking Hashem for Das, and that's very important, and therefore that has to go first? Or is it kind of on the contrary that we're saying that Deya is less important, and it's only a weekday thing? Like you were saying a minute ago, maybe do we not need Deya on Shabbos? So therefore, one opinion was saying that we put it only at the brachas of Chol. So therefore we're saying, don't think, because you're only putting it in the weekday brachas, as if it's less important. Rebbe Lazer wants to stress for us, realize how important Deya is. It's placed between two names of Hashem, showing again how essential it is for Hashem running the world and for us being able to understand our place in the world. We haven't even gotten to Rachmanis yet. That's the next piece of Gemara. But we're saying, so far, the importance of Das is underscored by the fact that it's between two names of Hashem. So Rav Elazar is saying, don't think the fact that we only mention Das in weekday Shemini Esrei means that it's less important. And we're saying, Metoch Shehiv Shal Choyl, Leficha Kavua Bebirkas Choyl, as if Das is not so important. No, Rav Elazar is saying, that may be the case. It was placed only in the brachas of the weekdays. Nevertheless, realize how important and how essential it is, like the Rashba says, it's a prerequisite for all the other things. So then Das of Torah, Das of Hashem, right? And Rebbe Lazer continues, V'chomi she'en bo Deya, also the Rachem Olav. Anybody who does not have this kind of Deya, who doesn't use their Deya properly, also the Rachem Olav, you also have Rachmanis on him. Chenema, as the Pasuk says, Ki loy am binoisu, the Navi says about the Jewish people, there are people who doesn't have understanding. Al keimo yirachmenu oisehu, therefore his maker, Hashem, will not have Rachmanis on him. So in other words, we see that a person who doesn't have this kind of Deya, who doesn't have this kind of Bina and Deya, you can't have Rachmanis on him. Now, a couple of them before should say that it doesn't mean not to have Rachmanis on him, he's for a Yid. What it means is, for example, we often know that you may have a person asks for something and it's not really in his best interest. If he had Deya, he would realize himself that it's not in his best interest and he wouldn't be asking for it. Hayos, he doesn't, then he's asking for it. You who has Deya has to realize this is actually not so good for him, and therefore you act in a way that seems not Rachmanistic. You turn down his request, but not because you're a lack of Rachmanis, but rather because you know what's better for him. And therefore the Navi is saying that Hashem is the same thing with us Jewish people. With that said, there is a line that the Rebbe quoted sometimes from the Friedrich Rebbe that says, you look at a person, what are Rachmanis on such a person, that the Torah says you can't have Rachmanis on him. So that's you have to have Rachmanis on him, but a Rachmanis of a different kind. Continues the Gemara. V'amar Rav Elazar, Godol Mikdash Shenitin Ben Shtei Osius. The same way as we're saying that Das is such an important thing that the Pasuk underscores that by putting it between two names of Hashem, which, as the Rashba says, those two names represent Din and Rachmim, the two poles with which Hashem runs the world. The same way the Mikdash, the Beis Mikdash, is also important. Shenitin Ben Shtei Osius. It's also placed between two names of Hashem. Shenema, we have in Shir HaSayam. Po'alto Hashem, that you have accomplished Hashem, Mikdash, the Mikdash, Hashem, Koninu Yodacha, that Hashem, your hands established. So we see the Mikdash is also placed between two names of Hashem, between two times when it says Havai. So Marsha explains that the idea is, you know, later on in the Masechta, we have in the last Perek, it says a line over there about Bezalel, that he had, the reason why he was the architect of the Mishkan, is because he knew how to combine together the letters with which Shemayim Va'aretz were created. So he had the ultimate idea of understanding how Hashem created and continues to run the world. So there, and therefore he was able to be the architect of the Beis Mikdash. So in the same vein, in other words, that a person nowadays also who has the das, who has das, of course, is somebody who's capable of building the Beis Mikdash. He deserves, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, as if the Beis Mikdash, he's considered as though the Beis Mikdash was built in his time, because he's able to accomplish the same kind of thing. So the Rashba and Akhtosev talk about in similar veins that every detail of the Beis Mikdash represents some aspect of Elikus and some aspect of how Hashem put energy into the world. So when a person has the proper Deya of Hashem of Elikus, then it means that he's achieved the things that are represented by the Mishkan by the Beis Mikdash. And Rav Elazar says in this connection, there's actually an equation between these two things. If a person has Deya, it's as if the Beis Mikdash was built in his times. Deya nitne ben shteyosis, Beis Mikdash nitne ben shteyosis. The very fact that both Deya and Mikdash are placed, each of them, between two names of Hashem, shows that there's a certain equation between them. Akosif, by the way, makes the point, don't think it's the other way around. Don't think that if a person brings Karbonus, then automatically it's the equivalent of having Deya. No, it's the other way around. We're saying that having Deya is the equivalent of having the Beis Mikdash built and bringing Karbonus, but the reverse is not true. It is, of course, possible for a person to be bringing Karbonus and not have a proper knowledge of Elikus. Maskifor of Acha Kachina, however, of Acha Kachina asks on that, Elamayata, by that logic, so you're saying any time that you have a word between two names of Hashem, then you're saying that's a tremendously great thing, and one is equal to the other. In that case, so you should say that Nekama is a great thing because it's placed between two names of Hashem. Dichtiv Keil Nekama is Hashem. Today's Shir Shoyan. Amalei, Rav Elazar says, as a matter of fact, yes. The milsa mihagdolahi. As a matter of fact, yes. In its place, when it took. So Maharsha explains when it comes to creating the world and when it comes to creating the Beis Mikdash, which is a miniature world and olam katan. Fine. Then we say you combine together din and rachman. But where is there a combination of din and rachman and Buddha when it comes to nekama? And the answer is ain. As a matter of fact, yes. The milsa mihagdolahi. Yes. As a matter of fact, nekama in its place is a great thing, and it involves Rachmim and Vura. Behindu Kidullah, Behindu the Omaullah, as Ullah says, Shtei Nakama Salalulama. Why does it say twice in the Pasik Nakama? Keon the Kama is Hashem, Keon the Kama is Sefia. Why both? Ech of the Torah, but Ech of the Puran, is the Ra. Because it means that Hashem is taking revenge for one for good and one for bad. You have the good that the Pasuk says Hashem appeared from Har Paran, meaning that Hashem appeared to all the nations and offered them the Torah, and they turned it down. So there's a good for the Jewish people that we did accept the Torah, and therefore the Nakama against the Goyim is for our benefit. So in other words, when Hashem takes revenge against the Goyim, where number one, they didn't receive the Torah, and number two, where they harassed and persecuted the Jewish people, so that is a combination of rachamim for us Jewish people and gura against the Goyim, and therefore, yes, it is very appropriate that the word nekama appears between these two names of Hashem. We have even in halacha, that Marashah mentions the point that you even have in halacha that that Hashem to a certain extent was mafkir the mammon of the nachrim as a result of the fact that they didn't accept the Torah. The Gemara mentions there in Bava Kamma of a thing a certain din in connection with a shosh and nogach when an ox damages and kills that a goy is always pays nezek cholim, whereas a yid's ox who does would be potter. Worth mentioning in that connection, an interesting thing that the Gemara tells a story in that connection, and the Yamshel Shlomo, the Marshal, has a very deep explanation about it. The Gemara there tells a story that at one point the Roman government sent two soldiers, two goyim, to Rav Gamliel to ask him to teach them the whole Torah. And he did. How he's allowed to teach goyim the whole Torah is another question. But let's not get into that. Anyway, at the end they tell him that the idea was at the end they're going to go and report back to the Romans on what on their findings. So they finish, they finally finish, they tell him, you know, everything that you taught us, we like, we find it very logical and everything, except for this one din about the Shosh and Nogach, or a Jew versus a Goy. It seems very discriminatory. But they say, you know what, we'll do you a favor, in our report to the emperor, we won't mention that point, so you guys don't get in trouble. So the Marshal there asks there, and Eisen Akasha, he says, Rav Gamliel knows that these guys are coming because they're going to be writing up a report for the government. How does he teach them such a halacha and not worry that the entire Jewish people might be destroyed because of it? And he says, because when it comes to Torah, there can't be any compromises. If he has to teach them the Torah, he can't falsify or compromise on any halacha and say it's not PC or whatever and we can't do it. No, you got to teach them as it is and let the chips fall where they may. In the end, they wish to help, but these guys said we'll have Rahmanus and we won't report it to the government. But even if it's not politically correct or even if it's whatever, we still, what the halacha is what the halacha is and that's that. And there's no playing around with it. What? So the halacha is, the Gemara says over there, that if a Jew's ox gores and kills a goy's ox, then the yid is potter. On the other hand, if a goy's ox gores and kills a yid's ox, whether it's tam or whether it's muad, even though by a yid to a yid, you would have the difference, chatzi nezek or nezek sholem, a goy always pays nezek sholem. So we were mentioning that because the Gemara mentions in that connection when the pasuk says Hefia mehar parah, the Gemara there explains in Rava Kamma it means Hefia that Hashem appeared and because they didn't accept the Torah, Hashem to that extent was mafkir their mom. Normally not, of course. You know, we say you're not allowed to cheat a goy, you're not allowed to steal from a goy, etc., etc. But for this, for purposes of this one halacha, we say that their money is treated like hefker. Yeah.
Religious,
but
went back to Jewish
religion. I'm not familiar with. I remember what you're talking about. Okay, yeah, let's tell it over for everybody's benefit. But yeah, during when in 1940, 41, when the Nebbe and the Nebbetzin were in the south of France preparing to flee from Europe, at one point everybody has to register over there what nationality or what religion or whatever they belong to. So the Rebbe wasn't home when they came to the door. The Nebbetzin said we're religious, and the Nebbe insisted, or Orthodox, I think it was. She said we're Orthodox, and the Nebbe insisted on going down to the police station over there and having it reported as Orthodox Jewish, so they don't make the mistake and think that they mean Orthodox Christian or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Same basic idea, right, that you can't compromise, right? Yeah. No, I'm going to didn't change it. That's the point. So when they translate it to Ptolemy, that's something else. They changed the translation of certain psukim so that they would be understood correctly. If they had translated them the way that it says in the pasuk, then the goyim would have misunderstood them. Here, what we're saying is, there's a halacha this way, and therefore he taught them the halacha as it is. Yeah. Okay. Onward. The Gemara says, and so now again, the Gemara goes on to discuss the matter of saying Havdalah, of saying Atachonin. The Gemara actually talks about that what you have is there were different stages, there were different periods of time with this Takonin. First, the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, when the Gemara explains, when the Jewish people first came back to Eretz Yisrael to build the second Beis Hamikdash, most of them were very poor. So many people couldn't afford wine for Havdalah. So therefore, the Chachamim of that time, the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, just said, you say Havdalah in Tefillin. You just say Atachonin, and that's that. Later on, the Gemara says, Hashiru, during the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, Jews became much richer and much more comfortable. Now, even the average person can afford wine. So then, the Chachamim took away Atachonin and said that you should only make Havdalah ala kos. Later on, the Gemara says, they were poor again. So now the Chachamim made that now you say Atachonin again, but even then, but they said that you should do both, Atachonin Tonu and Havdalah ala kos. So now the Gemara discusses that point. Tony Rav Acha Aricha Kameda Rav Chinina. Rav Acha Aricha taught a braisa in front of Rav Chinina. Hamavdo b'tfila meshugach yosim mishiyab de malakos. If a person says, Atachon Antonu, in Shemana Esrei, is better than somebody who makes Abdullah alakos, v'im hivdo bazu bazu. And if he does both, yonucholoi brachas aroshim chola, then brachas should rest on his head. So Marashar explains, because the bracha of Abdullah Amabdil is covered for Shabbos. So therefore, when a person is giving covered to Shabbos by saying it twice, then he should have the brachas of Shabbos rest doubly on his head. The Gemara actually goes on to discuss the ins and outs of it, and it says that is the bottom line halacha. Even though the Gemara brings another brice and it says differently, it ends up saying that is the halacha. If you weren't mavdil b'tefila, you still have to be mavdil ala kois. You can't get away with only havdalah b'tefila. But the ideal thing is, in fact, to do both. So now the Gemara goes on to discuss. So now the question is, what happens if Yom Tov comes out after Shabbos? What happens if Yom Tov is on Motzei Shabbos? So what do you do in terms of, so you don't say Atachon Antonu, of course, because you're not saying Atachonin. So where do you say something marking the difference between Shabbos and weekday? So the Gemara tells, Rav Zeira have a rochiv chamra. Rav Zeira one time was riding on a donkey, have a kashok of ozer Rav Chiya ba'oven basrei, and Rav Chiya ba'oven was walking behind Rav Zeira as a talmid. Omale, so he asks him, the pashas Rav Zeira is asking Rav Chiya ba'oven, vade damritu meshmed Rav Dechanan, is it true that I've heard that you say in the name of Rav Yechanan, that you chacham the Eretz Yisrael say in the name of Rav Yechanan, halacha k'rabbi Yehuda b'yomtiv shechal lias achar Shabbos fula, that when Yom Tov comes out after Shabbos, the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. In the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer says that throughout the whole year, when you're saying Havdalah B'Tfilah, Rabbi Eliezer says you don't say it in Atachonin like we do. Instead, you say it in Moedim, like where we would say Valanis, let's say. So Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah says that's where you would say Atachonin Antonu all year round. So now, Rav Zeira is asking Rav Chiya ba'oven, is it true that Rabbi Yochanan said that on a regular Motzei Shabbos weekday, no, we don't do that. We say it in the middle of Atachon Antonu, like Rabbi Akiva says. But when Yom Tov comes out after Shabbos, then we do in fact say it in Moedim, because after all, there's no bracha Atachon to say then. Omalei, so Rabbi Chiya ba'oven answers, lav halacha itmar. It's not that Rabbi Yochanan said that that's the halacha, elamatin itmar. What he said was we incline in that direction. Which Rashi explains, if we say it's halacha, then it means we would darshan publicly that we should do that, that we would say it in Modi. Matin would mean we don't darshan it publicly, we don't tell people to do that, but if a yochid asks, what should I do, then we tell him that this is how we should do it. As in fact, it was said, Rabbi Yitzchak bar Abdimi Omer Meshum Rabbeinu, that Rabbi Yitzchak bar Abdimi said in the name of Or Rebbe, which means Rav, halacha, that the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer when Yom Tov comes out on Matzah Shabbos, but Amilam Matin, and others say that Rav said that Matin, we only incline in that direction, meaning that if somebody asks, we tell them that's how to do, but not that we darshan it in public. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Moedim. Rabbi Yochanan though says differently, that it means Rabbi Yochanan says the Chachamim in that case agree with Rabbi Eliezer. In other words, according to what we said so far, there's a machlokes. Rabbi Eliezer is saying that you would say it in Moedim in that case. The Chachamim still say you would say it elsewhere in Shemoneh Esrei. And now Rabbi Yochanan would be saying that no, when it comes and when Yom Tov is on Motzei Shabbos, everybody would agree that you say it in Moedim. But Rabbi Chiya ba'Abba Omar Nirin. Rabbi Chiya ba'Abba has yet another version that Rabbi Yochanan didn't say any of the above. What he said is Nirin. It seems logical to accept what Rabbi Eliezer says, but not that we would actually pass him like that. If somebody does, like Rabbi Eliezer, and says the paragraph of Havdalah in Moedim, we're not going to make him repeat Shemana Esrei, but not that we would pass him like that, even for a Yochid, let alone for a Rab. There's a Tosfos elsewhere in Shas where you also have this kind of thing, Moedim or Matin or Nirin or whatever, where Tosfos discusses a little differently that Nirin may mean similar to the way Rashi explains Matin, that it means that if an individual comes and asks us what the halacha is, we can tell them this is an appropriate thing to do, but not that we would actually tell the rabbin to do it. So, Omer Rav Zeira, Nekot de Rav Chiya ba'Abba b'Yodcha. You can accept it, you can take in your hand what Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba is saying. In other words, Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba's version, which is that it's only nirin, that it's not that the halacha is actually like Rabbi Eliezer, but only b'diyeved. If you said that paragraph in Mordim, we're not going to make you repeat Shemoneh Esrei. That would seem to be the best one. The dayik for gama shmeita mi puma demara shape perach for the puma disa. Because Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba is very precise, and he learns things from the ones who said it. In this case, from Rabbi Yochanan, like Rachba from Pumbedisa, who was also known to be very precise in what he quoted from his Rebbe. The Amar Rachba, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, as we find that Rachba says in the name of his Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda, Harabayis stov kofel hoya. The Harabayis had a double stov. Now, a stov is an area where you have benches and then you have a roof over them. So in Gemara terminology, usually such a structure is called an istva. And in fact, you have Mishnayos that refer to it as such. The Greek, what? Not just benches. No, bench is something else. Here we're talking about it's an area with benches and then you have over it as a roof held up by pillars. So in English, it's called a colonnade. The usual Gemara term for such a thing is an istva. But the Greek word for it was stov, and when Rabbi Yehuda taught how the Hanabayas was constructed, and he taught it to Rachba, then he taught the word v'hoya stov l'fnim mistov. There was a double row of those colonnades, one inside the other. Meaning there was a row of them around the edge of the Hanabayas, and then within that there was a second row. All surrounding the Hanabayas. The idea is that this way, for example, if it's rainy or if it's otherwise bad weather, then you have a place to sit under the roofs over there and you don't get wet. The Hanabayas, you're allowed to sit, after all. So the point is, in other words, Rashi says, first of all, Rashi says two explanations. One is that Rachba uses the word stov, which is the exact same word that Rabbi Yehuda used, even though usually in Gemara terminology, we would use the word itztava instead. So the fact that he didn't instead change it to itztava, l'fnim itztava, shows that he was very precise in telling over what Rabbi Yehuda says. Then Rashi says a second explanation that some people explain, that Rachba said, that Rachba would clarify that this might be from Rav Yehuda, the Amora, or it might be from Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana. Rashi says, I don't like that explanation because Rachba lived long after Rabbi Yehuda the Tana. How could he possibly be saying something in his name? Also, Rashi explains it doesn't really fit with the wording of the Gemara. In any case, the point is that Rav Zera is saying, out of all the various versions of what Rabbi Yochanan says, Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba is known to be the most precise in telling over things in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, and therefore most likely the halacha is like it. And then we'll continue tomorrow with what we actually do halacha l'maisa when Yom Tov comes out after Shabbos, where we know we say Matur Dienu, but we're going to discuss that in the Gemara tomorrow. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Geula, Vav Kislev. So we know the Friedrich Rebbe announced and publicized that we've already finished the entire Avoda, even polishing the buttons. We've already finished Imdu Hochem Kochem. Everybody is already standing ready. Everything is already prepared for the Soda taken from Yad Mamash. So we have to publicize everywhere that was already standing at the end of all of Maaseinu Vavod Aseinu. We're already at the point. This was a Sikha of Kiseitze. So we're already on the stage of Kiseitze and Mohammed Aloy Becha. We go to war and we're above our enemies, and we're already at the beginning of the period of reward, the Matan Schorim Shal Tzedikim, which is expressed in the Pesukim of Bohoya Kisave, that we're going to come into the land of Eretz Yisrael and inherit it. Talking about brachas before food, when you're making a bracha on a food or on food or drink or something that you're going to smell or something that you're going to do a mitzvah, you have to first hold it in your right hand and think about what bracha you're going to say. Because when you're saying the name Hashem in the bracha, which is the main thing of the bracha, you have to know what you're going to finish with. If you're not holding it at all, it's just on the table in front of you, you're also yotze. But if it wasn't in front of you at all, they just brought it afterwards, even though you were thinking about it at the time of the bracha, no good, you have to make the bracha. I'm going to